Welcome to The Perfect Storm, a podcast for business executives and cybersecurity professionals. Industry veterans Michael Markulek and Matthew Webster chat with guests about the latest cyber news, threats, and trends, and how all of it impacts their businesses. Harbor Technology Group is a cybersecurity consulting firm that offers advisory services to the SMB. Harbor believes by taking a proactive rather than reactive approach to cybersecurity, business leaders can develop a cybersecurity program that will address external requirements, exceed client expectations, and ultimately take their organization to the next level. Harbor's innovative processes are based on industry standard frameworks that are tailored to meet the needs of small and medium-sized businesses.
So welcome back to another edition of The Perfect Storm. I'm honored today to have a unique guest and actually a very timely guest as we recently had some changes to the CMMC phase two requirements. And we'll get in and talk about that. But really happy to have Adam Austin here from Totem. Adam, if you'll take a couple of seconds, just give us a little bit about your background. Tell us about Totem and touch on the unique solution you have and where it fits in the CMMC compliance world, because I really do think you've got a unique offering here that can help a lot of folks.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity, Michael. It's good to see you again. Good to be on. I'm Adam Austin, co-founder and president of Totem Technologies. We like to say that Totem was forged in the fires of federal government cybersecurity compliance. Our parent company, who we're co-located with in Ogden, Utah. I work out of a home office here in South Central Pennsylvania, but parent company in 2015 won a small business set-aside prime contract with the U.S. Air Force to do contractor logistics support. So that's maintenance, overhaul, repair, shipping, spare parts management, and cybersecurity for an Air Force weather sensing system. It was set aside for small business. That company's a micro business. It was at one point up to 15 employees, but now it's about six. So we've been executing for 11 plus years now. In the first option year of that contract in 2016, the contract was modified to include the cybersecurity clauses that I assume we'll talk a little bit about later. And my background is cybersecurity governance and risk management for all sorts of systems for federal government, NASA, all branches, the Department of Defense, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid systems with Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. So I took a look at these new requirements and I knew it was how big of a challenge it was going to be for our little business executing this small business set aside. So we started building the tools for ourselves to manage the compliance. There was nothing on the market that was priced back then, at least, that was priced for small businesses. But I come from these enterprise compliance environments where I have these tools. So I was like, we need to use these tools. We'll just build them for ourselves. And then the light bulb kind of went off in 2017. And we were like, okay, we can offer these to our subcontractors and maybe on the general market and see how it does. And it done well. So that's the provenance behind Totem Technologies. And we split it off formally as a separate company in 23 and really haven't looked back. So we were around before CMMC was a thing. And now that CMMC is a thing and maybe being reformed, we'll still be around. So our focus is on small businesses, especially in the defense industrial base. But we really have a place in our heart for the micro businesses because that's what we are. So we consider that under fewer than 25 employees. And our focus really is on fewer than 10 employees. So we built for those really tiny businesses that just need a platform on which to handle some of the sensitive information. They don't really know what the information is. Nobody's told them. They kind of have to guess at it. Or if they do have a good grip on what it is and they handle it infrequently or they just don't have to do a lot with the information, then they can conceivably handle it on a single workstation. The problem is all of these requirements are applicable no matter how big your IT system is. So the requirements don't scale down if your IT system scales down. So it's a serious challenge to pack all of this stuff in any IT system, let alone a single PC or a single workstation. So we build out the what we call a single PCC UI enclave for micro businesses. And we handle all the securing of that and put it in the hands in an operational, like out of the box, it's operational for micro businesses, one or two person organizations, or micro businesses with only one or two or three people that need to handle this information. So it's a unique product in the quote unquote ecosystem of DIB cybersecurity compliance. And we're very excited about it. I actually use the same approach for another company that I have that I do consulting work with. So, yeah.
You mentioned the micro business, the small business. Having dealt with many of these companies, I'd actually say the mid-sized business as well, because a lot of those organizations are still dealing off of spreadsheets, right? They got a 110 controls in level two, and they've got 320 assessment objectives, and they're running a 400, 500 line spreadsheet and trying to manage it that way. So while I think your solution, and especially your GRC tool, governance, risk, and compliance tool, is maybe the genesis was around the small micro business, I think it's applicable probably up until organizations get to the size where they're ready to go bring in a bigger, more robust GRC tool. And that may be 250 employees, not 25.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have clients that are 10,000 employees using our tools. Just depends on what the folks in that company are used to, if they outsource IT or do it internally, and what sorts of tools they're used to. But yes, I agree. The planning and compliance management part of our offerings is definitely, it can scale to whatever size business, really.
So we could head down that conversation for a while, but I do want to talk about the news of the day, which is the Department of War's change around CMMC phase two. So for listeners that haven't read up on this or not attuned to it, federal government put in place a process, CMMC, a maturity model, to evaluate the cybersecurity preparedness of contractors to the government. That's gone through many iterations. Phase one has been in place for a couple of years now, which is self-reporting. Phase two was really about the requirement to get third-party accreditation or credentials, really like a SOC 2 or an ISO 27001, but specific to how organizations in the defense industrial base handle controlled but unclassified information. So without explaining much more than that, I want to get your take on the suspension of the phase two rules. What do you think this means for businesses in the defense industrial base? And if you're given any recommendations like stay the course or postpone your assessments, you know, kind of where's your thinking at?
Well, I'll start with the end of that first. So those of us that are in the contracting space for the Department of Defense or Department of War, You need to keep on keeping on what you're doing, unless you're in the negotiation stages with one of these third-party assessors. Right now, you have a lot of leverage to negotiate a lower cost, a lower fee for that assessment because of the pending reform of the third-party part of this thing. But the rest of us, the requirements have not changed. The requirements to protect the federal government information and the more technical subset of that federal government information that we call controlled, those requirements have been around for over a decade now, and they go into all contracts. And those most likely will not change out of this. I mean, it would be a total shock if they change the actual requirements to have to protect this type of information. What they did change, as you mentioned, is they postponed the third-party assessment or verification certification part of this. Part of their rationale for the postponement was to do a study. They've formed a reform task force to solicit information from those of us in the contracting space on what the challenges have been with implementation and assessment, as well as what we think a better model might be. So my reaction to it was positive. We've been complaining. We, the small business subcontractors in the defense industrial base, have been complaining about the cost of these assessments since the assessment ecosystem has been built. And then the cost of implementation is another thing, but the requirements to protect the information, like I said, have been around a decade. So we could continue complaining about the cost of implementation, but that's really going to fall on deaf ears. The cost of assessment, though, when you're talking about multiple tens of thousands of dollars, even for a very small business, that's really just a non-starter for most small businesses that are trying to get their feet wet into Department of War contracting. And I don't think the Department of War explicitly acknowledged that they hear those the consternation and the hand wringing and are going to do something about it.
Let's back up a little bit in the timeline. 800-171, the core requirements on how you handle controlled unclassified information, you're right, have been around a decade or more. CMMC came into place because nobody was following those rules.
That's right.
So CMMC really was born out of, okay, we've got a way to, you know, we've got to find a way to do this. Phase one focused on self-assessment.
That's right.
And if you go, and I haven't done this, but I bet you if you go to Spurs, you know, the reporting system, and you looked up, almost everybody's reporting 110, right? Which is full score.
So they say.
So we have this gap between what is being implemented and what the requirements are. And,
that's right.
You know, level two was that verification. And to me, I think verification is important. I think it's an important step. Third-party assessments, whether it be a SOC 2, ISO 27001, or even getting away from information security. You know, talk about ISO 9000, you know, the standards around AS or the fact that we got Sarbanes-Oxley and you know, financial reporting. I think all of those things are good. So I'm not sure that I'm in full agreement that this is a good thing. I'm trying to wrap my head around, where do we go? Right? We can't go back to just phase one self-reporting, and auditors are always going to cost money. I don't care what they're auditing. We're between a little bit of a rock and a hard place here and not quite sure where we come out.
Yeah. And another great analogy for why it's important to do these types of assessments is like when you buy a house, you get it inspected by an objective, independent home inspector, right? Before you're going to put money on procuring this new home. And it's the same. So the Department of War wanted that inspection of our house before it gives us the privilege of handling its information. So I totally agree. When I say it's a good thing, I mean the reform of the assessment model. So the assessment model as introduced in 2020, 2021 is a point in time paperwork assessment. So the assessors come in and review in large part hundreds of pages of documentation that you put together that describes your company's approach to securing this information. And then they'll do an interview part of the assessment where they'll ask you to answer questions and maybe provide live demonstration. But the majority of the cost goes into human eyeballs on paperwork, which takes many hours. I've done many of these types of assessments. It takes anywhere from 3 full business days to a business week to assess the volume of documentation, even for a small business. So we now have AI, large language models. We have automated pen testing types of things that we can do. I just think the model can be drastically improved to drive down the number of hours that a human has to put eyes on something. And that way we can drive down the cost and make participation in this supply chain more available to small businesses.
I think you're right. And I was actually early on, I was expecting that primes take aside direct work to the government and small business set asides and all those kinds of things. But, you know, I always thought more of the responsibility should be on the primes to do that inspection. Ultimately, they're the ones responsible to the federal government.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe they should have a bigger piece, right? They shouldn't go through the same assessment that we do. They should be providing those assessment kind of services. So
kind of like the payment card industry, self-policed at the threat from government intervention, but the payment card industry, big players, the primes, if you will, came together and created a relatively common sense for the time assessment of any organization or entity that wants to process payments using credit cards. They built their own assessment ecosystem and presented it, and government and banks, especially financial institutions, were like, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I agree. If you let the primes come together, the large prime contractors, Northrop's, Boeing's, they could build their own system as well, their own assessment regime.
Yeah, the payment card industry is a great example because my barber doesn't know anything about PCI.
That's right.
He's taking credit cards and he goes to a transactor. That transactor, you know, forms it to a larger transactor, and the whole chain is protected. All he knows is he's got to use a specific piece of equipment in a specific way, and therefore he's covered.
That's right.
That's a great analogy. One of the other things that, and it's, I realize it's only been a couple of days, but we've seen some very uneven responses from the federal government in terms of what this means. And I'll give you an example. DCMA is still conducting their DPCAC High assessments full schedule. They're not changing anything. They're not modifying any of the requirements. They're moving full speed ahead and almost completely ignoring this. Contracting officers are telling some of our clients and folks I talk to that right now they just can ignore their CMMC responsibilities. So we're getting, they're one-off cases, but I'm not getting a unified message or I'm not hearing a unified message out of the Department of War, the federal government on what this really is going to land on. And I don't know if you've heard any rumblings out there or seen the same thing. That's a very mixed message right now.
Yeah, I think that's in large. I've seen the same. I echo those sentiments. The DIBCAC high assessments, so where a government entity comes in and does a verification inspection,
yep.
Those are covered by a separate contractual clause from CMMC. So that doesn't surprise me that that's their message. The contracting officer communication, though, it also doesn't surprise me that that's all over the place, because the contracting officers have not been as well informed as we would hope. Our parent company has had conversations with contracting officer that it's apparent that this, and it's a relatively new KO, so we cut them some slack, but it's apparent that they're not quite familiar with all the clauses related to cybersecurity. And we had to kind of like educate our customer on this. So one thing they did say, though, at the end of a very recent conversation just this week was, oh, by the way, the phase two has been suspended for CMMC, so don't worry about a third-party certification, which is in line with the other communications. So that doesn't surprise me. We've been dealing with this language since 2017, so almost 10 years now. And one of the biggest challenges for businesses in this industry is the mixed communication from contracting officers, the government folks in charge of the contract. They just haven't been brought up to speed quick enough to deal with all of the requirements. And a lot of it is some technical speak. We're asking technical questions back to our customers, and they're not equipped to deal with it. So it doesn't surprise me. It was also the announcement, which took place on Monday the 13th, was they suspended this phase two before it even began. And the reform task force query period, which is 60 days, will end before that phase was supposed to begin.
Correct.
So in my view, it's a little reckless. They could have just announced a task force, given them 60 days. At the end of the 60 days, which was somewhere in September, then they could say, okay, now we're going to suspend it, this upcoming thing. So it was a weird announcement in general. I think my gut is that the government wanted to get some wins on this with small businesses. And they were just like, okay, we're going to put a stop to at least the expensive assessment part of this for now and reevaluate in 60 days.
So flipping over to recommendations of what we're telling our folks now.
Yeah.
So I'm telling my clients to stay the course, right?
Yeah.
If you're early in the phase one CMMC process, keep building out, keep doing the right things that get you to 110 or, a perfect score in terms of implementing or all the controls being met. Keep doing that. Work for your self-assessment. Do all that. If you're currently engaged in an audit, you've already contracted with a C3PAO, a third-party assessor, stay the course. You've already got a contract in place. You're already doing it. Some form of verification is going to be required in the future. It may change, but you're not going to penalize yourself by completing the audit if you've got one scheduled to kick off next week. The one case where I'm telling people to maybe tap the brakes is if you have not engaged with the third-party assessor yet, like you're planning to do it in October or whatever this year.
Right.
At that point, you might consider waiting 30 days to see what comes out of the government before you sign that contract. If nothing else, the November 10th deadline is going to move. Got to. You can't suspend it and then a couple of days before it is due, turn it back on. So that date will obviously move, even if nothing changes. So our advice has been stay the course. If you're currently not scheduled for an audit, maybe don't schedule it yet. Maybe hold off until we get better advice. And that's kind of what I've been telling our clients and, other folks. Matter of fact, I wrote a blog on this morning, but I don't know if your advice or what you're advising your clients is any different, but.
Exactly the same. There will have to be an assessment model because the government has vast amounts of evidence that when your feet are not held to the fire, when there's no accountability, that vast swaths of the industrial base will not do their job protecting this information. So there has to be some sort of assessment, even if it's drastically reformed after this. If you have the certification already in hand, or you're in the process of this third-party assessment that leads to a certification, I can't conceive of them just sort of invalidating all these certificates. That would open the government up to so much liability. There would be a class action lawsuit from all of us who have paid for these certifications. What I think there'll be is some sort of grandfathering. Like, okay, there's this new assessment regime that may come out of this task force, maybe not. Like you said, maybe the date is just pushed. But if there's a new assessment regime, they'll say, okay, you've already gone through, you've already paid for this assessment. You are automatically qualify under this for X number of years.
Yeah, maybe you get your 3-year window, which you were going to get anyway.
Yeah, so all of the investment in the cybersecurity program is definitely worth it. And you're required to do that anyway, whether or not you're assessed.
Yes.
And then the assessment, the certification part of it, will have to translate into something after all this.
It's kind of interesting time. I mean, we're not getting an administration change for another, you know, 2+ years. So I don't suspect that will be no wholesale pick up, change the whole program. Government doesn't move quickly. So the fact that they say they're going to reassess what they're doing and come out with new guidance in 60 days, I tend to doubt that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just the gray hair speaking, but I'm guessing that we probably won't have clear guidance until the end of this year. And my guess is that there'll be a change verification process. And that verification process for businesses will then be hopefully less expensive and simplified.
Yeah, and we have to keep in mind that the CMMC, the original version of it, was first released and announced during the first Trump administration. So they're invested in this administration. I'm curious what your dream assessment or verification model would be coming out of this.
So maybe I'll lean it back to SOC 2 Type 2.
Okay.
Because I think that is a pretty well-established regime. You go through a Type 1, which is at relatively lower cost, where somebody's just looking at your controls. Tell us what you're doing, and you know, we'll evaluate that. And we're not going to come in and ask for proof, ask for evidence. So I would think that some kind of Type 1, some type of control review would be one step. And then it may be based upon size of organization, volume, sensitivity of data, something like that, that triggers the need for a Type 2, which is where you've got to show the proof, right? You say you have an awareness training program. It looks like you've got one documented, but now show me the 30 people in your organization and prove to me that they went through the necessary training.
And that it's sustainable. So that's been done over time.
Correct.
Not just at a point in time.
The nice thing about SOC 2 and a lot of the folks, the GRC tools that play in place, you can automate a lot of this, right?
Yes. So
what we've seen over the past 6, 7, 8 years is the cost of SOC 2 certifications, the audits, have come down significantly. So I'd say they're half of what they used to be.
That is significant.
Even from bigger firms like national or large regional accounting firms. So if I had to, and again, I'm doing this off of the top of my head, if I had to think about a model that I would lean towards is, let's bifurcate looking at the controls versus looking at the evidence, make sure everybody gets the controls looked at, prioritize who's got to have the evidence looked at, and hopefully do it in a way where you can force down the cost by making it more automated, simpler.
Yeah.
That would be my suggestion, but I'm one guy, you know, floating in a very big ocean.
Yeah, I haven't played in the SOC 2 space that much, so that's enlightening to me that the costs have come down 50% over the course of the SOC 2 approach.
And some of that, and I think the C3PAOs or the third-party assessors doing the CMMC, I think SOC 2 used to be much more expensive because there was a limited handful of folks that could do it. I think given having only limited C3PAOs out there today raises the cost.
Yeah, SOC 2 has to be done by a CPA.
Yep.
That's part of the AICPA. Yeah.
But again, so you got to have proper accreditation. You got to be properly trained to do it. We're not looking for, you know, rubber stamps, but now more people offer it. Not just your large national accounting firms, but pretty much in New Jersey here, I could find hundreds of small CPA firms that offer SOC 2 assessments. And because there's enough supply to meet the demand. I think the demand right now is very high. The number of C3PAOs is very low. So therefore, you're artificially inflating those costs.
What I've been seeing from social media posts for the C3POs and actually talking with some of the colleagues that we have that are assessors was that the demand actually wasn't that high for them. They were very much looking forward to the November 10th phase two kick in because they thought that would increase the demand. And they were actually cautioning those of us that were dragging our feet because they expected a bottleneck through November 10th.
That explains high cost. I would have thought the bottleneck was going to be in late September and October, right? Everybody trying to get it done by November 9th.
Yeah. And leading up to Monday when they announced CMMC, our inquiries at our company had gone up significantly. So like multiple tens of percent over the last month or so. Because as we get closer to November 10th, the companies that were dragging their feet or that had started to get word from their customers like, hey, we're going to expect this as soon as we give you a follow-on contract or the next option year or whatever. The next task order or delivery order, like this is coming, or before the suspension, they were like starting to get more concerned about it and nervous and starting to look for that help.
And we'll be crystal clear to anybody listening. They still need that help. They still need to comply with the NIST 800-171 controls. And if you're not doing that, reach out to Totem, reach out to Harbor. I talked to a defense contractor this week who's done nothing. And you know, they're like, oh, I've got a requirement to do this by November.
How long have they been in the contracting space?
Oh, years.
Yeah. That's ostrich mode then, I feel like. Unless they just had not been communicated.
I don't think it's ostrich mode is probably the right scenario because they heard it. They just chose not to do it.
Yeah, then that's on them.
Yep. 100% on them. And
these requirements go into all contracts. The prime contractors, the tier ones, the guys that deal directly with the government, they are expected to flow them down. And they have been relatively consistently. We keep talking about it for a decade or more. That's no consolation to those of us that are just trying to get our feet wet and are new to contracting. Like all of this is very overwhelming. It can be a huge barrier to entry. But if you've been in the space for even a couple of years, you should know about this.
Some of these firms are making shoelaces for boots.
Widgets.
Yeah. Just shoelaces for boots. And somebody decided to put that CUI. And next thing you know, somebody who's never had to do it, never prepared for it, and basically just ignored it. That's probably, it's the minority, but they do exist.
There's something to be said for being able to talk your way out of that, which is like a boot shoelace is not CUI, unless it's some kind of like bulletproof, some kind of crazy new technology. But you should be able to push back on the customer and reduce their expectations if you're not handling this type of information. But you should have done that.
You
should have it in writing.
Right. Just because they threw a DFARS clause into a contract or into a proposal. I mean, you need to have those contract conversations with your contracting officer through the process. So that if you're making, shoelaces, then
you don't just ignore it. Yeah, you don't never ignore a contractual clause. Get it in writing that it's not applicable or that you can disregard it.
Right.
But don't just assume.
All right, Adam, I just want to be fair to our listeners in time. You and I could probably spend hours talking about this. I'll give you a couple minutes. Anything that came out of the conversation, anything else that you want to kind of impart to the listeners before we wrap up?
Yeah, just reiterate, stay the course. The requirements are not going to change to protect this information. Your obligations, no matter where you are in the supply chain, whether you're tier one prime, tier two subcontractor, or tier three and below supplier, vendor, whatever you do in the Department of War supply chain or in federal government supply chain for that matter, you're most likely handling some sort of sensitive federal government information. You therefore have obligations to protect that. The CMMC is just the assessment model verifying that you're meeting your obligations. So do not take this suspension of phase two as, okay, then we can just forget about all of protecting the information that we are really privileged to handle by virtue of being a federal contractor. So that's, I would just stress that point, which we've been trying to stress here in this conversation.
Now, certainly as this story continues to develop and things change, we'd like to get you back on maybe later this year when we do have some clearer guidance out of the Department of War on where we're headed.
Love to.
But as we get ready to close, and I kind of pre-warned you at the beginning as we were prepping, Harbor Technologies was born out of me and my business partner both living in towns with the name Harbor in it. So we've got this affinity, and I see the Hawaiian shirt on. You know, we've got this affinity for beachfront locations where you can grab a cold beer, watch the sun go down. I said earlier, sun come up on the East Coast, which I got to admit, I don't stay up for sunrise as much as I used to.
Well, stay up. So that, yeah, I like that. Stay up versus getting up early.
But if you're going to stay up for sunrise, where, you know, in a port town, where should we do it?
Yeah. So not quite a port town or harbor town, but the beach town that is nearest and dearest to my heart is Sandbridge Beach, Virginia. So it is the southernmost part of Virginia Beach. The beginning of the Outer Banks, in fact, actually start in Virginia, and they're not all in North Carolina. My grandparents had a house there. My grandfather was a naval aviator and was stationed at Oceana Naval Air Station, which is right by there. And they had a house, a vacation house, and as kids, we would go there in the summertime. And my wife and I were married there. We most years go back there and visit. And there's a little place called the Sandbridge Beach Market and a restaurant, Sandbridge Restaurant, that's attached to the market. That's right in the, if you want to call it downtown, but it's a little beach, little sleepy beach town. And they have great pizza, awesome hush puppies, and you can get a beer and watch the sunrise. Well, you'd have to bring your own beer because I don't think they're open at sunrise, but you can definitely watch the sunset reflect off of the waves coming in from the east, which is my favorite part, especially fishing at sunset.
Right.
And having the last rays of the sun over the dunes highlight the tops of the waves, and then you can actually see the flashes of the fish in those waves as you're fishing. So Sandbridge Beach, Virginia.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for your time today. Hopefully my listeners got a lot out of this, and yeah, definitely going to bring you back as we close this up.
Thanks for the opportunity. Good to see you.
Perfect.
Harbor's innovative processes are based on industry standard frameworks that are tailored to meet the needs of small and medium-sized businesses. We would also like to thank Tom Marshall for the original music. Yes, that Tom Marshall from Fish fame. Harbor's portfolio of services is designed to meet the cybersecurity needs of small and medium enterprises. We offer a range of services from cyber risk advisory to VCSO consulting to meet specific security requirements without putting a strain on your technology budget. If you like what you heard here, be sure to subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues. We release new podcasts and are available on Spotify and Apple. You can reach us through our website if you have additional questions or suggest a great harbor we should mention on our next show.